Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. It might sound a little bit funny tonight because I've got a handheld microphone. It's the same microphone, but it's handheld. And I don't know if holding it will create any kind of sounds, any kind of background artifacts in the audio. But we'll find out, I suppose. You want to know what happened? It's pretty silly. So in my kitchen, there's three down lights, but only two of them ever worked, and the third down light socket was empty. And one of the two working down lights decided to stop. So then I only had one down light. And then I thought, better get another one. I'd like to get back up to two, because one wasn't quite bright enough. So I went and bought another light, LED. But then lazily, I didn't take out the one that had stopped working. I just went, oh, there's an empty socket here. I'll just chuck it in there. Right? And so I did that. And then I flipped the switch and it went pow, like that. And then sparks came out. And then the power went out. And it seems to have done some kind of circuit damage, because now the safety switch won't come back off and only one of the three circuits for the house works. So a whole half of my house has no power and none of the lights work. But the kitchen and the lounge room still have power, which is good because it means the fridge is still on. That's convenient. And it also means the heater happens to be in one of those two rooms. So I can still get heating, which is nice. And the TV still works, and the internet still works. I had to relocate my computer, though, because the office where this computer was, no power. All because I tried to change a light bulb. I thought, I can change a light bulb. Like, I'm not very handy when it comes to stuff like that. I can figure stuff out, but I've just never really been much of a handyman. And I thought, yeah. Easy, light bulb. I've changed a million light bulbs. I can do that much. Like, I can change a tire. I can check my oil. I can change a light bulb. And so I popped one in and kablam. Turns out, no, I cannot change a light bulb. I do not know what I'm doing. Electrician is coming in tomorrow. Called the landlord. They're organizing all that. Everything's fine. It's going to be fine. But just for tonight, I had to move the computer. And the table. This is a long story, a boring one too. The table in my kitchen has a weird slanted edge, which the desk-mounted microphone stand that I use will not connect to this slanted edge. So, long story short, I have to hold the microphone. I could have moved the table, but that's just way too much effort. I'm not switching tables. I could have also probably run a power cable, a power and extension lead out into the office rather than moving my computer into the kitchen. But hey, I only just thought of that now, so I'm stupid. Anyway, here we are. That was a long story, and not the kind of story that you tuned in for. Bogan War and Peace is off and running. Really, really happy with the reception that I've got. I've only really posted about this on my Instagram, my Andalus Instagram, which got a great reaction. People seem to be finding it. It's giving people a chuckle, which is everything I ever wanted for this project, is for people to get a little chuckle. I shared it on the A Year of War and Peace subreddit, and I shared it with you guys on the Hemingway List. It's like really good reception. I was actually really surprised. The A Year of War and Peace subreddit, it got 149 upvotes. 149 upvotes. Isn't that bloody brilliant? So thank you to everybody who has sent well wishes. And a couple of people have bought the book too. Now, let me have a little look at something. Just check. Nope. The ebook is still not live. I don't know what's taking them so long to get this ebook live. So hopefully that happens in the next few hours or in the next day. And there will be an ebook version. And that's going to be the cheapest. The Kindle book is 99 cents. That's the cheapest that you can make a Kindle book. And so that's going to be available very soon. Because I understand that, you know, $10 is for the print book. That's, you know, $10. Not everyone has $10 to try out a new book. But 99 cents on the ebook store, hopefully people are interested. Maybe no one's interested. I've also got some paperbacks on their way. I've ordered a little batch for myself so I can sell them around. You know, I'm sure I'll sell a few in person. So, I don't know. It's exciting. I'm excited because it's been 5 years since I've had a new book to share with the world. And this isn't the novel that I've been working on for the last 5 years, but that's really close to being finished as well. But it's still a book with my name on it that I produced. So, I don't know. It just feels like, man, this took 5 years for me to get here, to having a new book for people to enjoy. So I'm very, very excited. All right, enough about that. You guys don't care. You guys just want to hear about Anna Karenina, and so do I. Fair enough. Part 1, Chapter 15 goes like this. The prince much prefers Levin over Vronsky. Why? What do you think he sees in him? What's your first impressions of the prince and general discussion? Swim said the mum of fishy said, the prince equates Vronsky to Oblansky, and you'll find it out, but too late, just like with poor Dolly. Recall that the princess arranged Dolly's marriage, and we know how that turned out. The prince is pointing out how she is orchestrating and maneuvering towards what will be the same result for Kitty. The moral is, Vronskys are a dime a dozen and not worth much, while Levin is a diamond in the rough. Diamond in the rough. You know, the thing about choosing a partner, and hey, this isn't coming from personal experience or anything. When you choose a partner who seems to be the diamond in the rough, you have got to expect that the rough will come along with the diamond. The rough that they are embedded in, enmeshed in, their family and connections, it all seems so very rough. How did you turn out so good with all this roughness? Yeah. When you bring someone into your life, you're bringing all their family and connections into your life. So be warned. Personal warning. A little personal warning. That's a Andalus personal warning. Copyright. Patent pending. Enjoy that. Altreat said, yes, that stood out to me as well. I was wondering last chapter if there was much parallel between Oblonsky and Vronsky, since both came off as very likable and have much ease in society. So Oblonsky is married to one of those three sisters, one of the older two, Dolly. And Kitty, being the youngest one, is the one that Levin wants. Okay. And Vronsky is a outside party also who wants Kitty. Got it. And so when Oblansky said to Levin that his wife reckons that Kitty should get with him, she was talking about her own sister. So that's a good little inside scoop. Techrific said, Kitty's father seems modern. The whole matchmaking business is repulsive to him, as he doesn't want to see Kitty debased as a mere chattel to be auctioned off. He also wants her to have fun, to have music and dancing. I think Kitty's father is afraid Vronsky will turn out to be just another Stever that will make Kitty as unhappy as Dolly currently is. To me, he seems like an excellent father, and I can see where the mother is coming from, too. She's just misguided in her well-meaning intent. Kitty is in turmoil because she can't choose between a man whose exterior just telegraphs all that a woman could ever want in a husband and a man whose interior is precious to her. If only they could be one person and not two. I am Norwegian, said the prince, much prefers Levin over Vronsky. What do you think he sees in him? Well, Levin is pretty much already family at the Shabatskys. The prince already loves Levin like a son, I'm assuming. And he knows his character. He knows what kind of a husband he'll be, and he won't be like Stepan. Techrific said, and given what he said to his wife about the countryside, he must approve of Levin's choice of a place of residence. A linguistic note, says Cortio. In Russian, the original, the prince, when speaking about his daughters, doesn't actually use the anglicized nicknames Kitty and Dolly. Instead, he uses traditional, extra affectionate variants, Katenka and Dashenka. For reference, their full names are Yekaterina and Darya. I have access only to Garnet translation, and she used Kitty and Dolly throughout the chapter. I Am Norwegian said, luckily the Bartlett translation maintained the use of Katenka and Dashenka. Well, there you go. Some different translations choose whether or not to keep different little linguistic markers. Markers? I don't know why I said that word. I'm tired. PNV used Katenka and Dashenka as well, says Al Treat. Pyrrhal Bullfinch said, it seems that Vronsky is very attractive to women and appears to be the perfect catch on the surface. I think the prince isn't impressed in the same way with the ladies are, so it doesn't care much for him. He recognizes that Levin's proposal is sincere, and he admires that. If he knows Levin's character, he might admire his principles and integrity. In terms of social class, Levin is just as good a match for Kitty as Vronsky is. Is that true? I thought, I had the impression that Vronsky was a little bit higher in social class because Levin's always gone on about how hard he works on his farm and this kind of stuff. Al Treat said, I think he summed it up when he said Levin had serious intentions while Vronsky is amusing himself. Vronsky can say the right things at a gathering and he's got a good resume and he probably is interested in Kitty on some level. But I think the prince sees a deep and abiding respect towards Kitty and Levin. Someone who may be awkward on the surface, but who can truly appreciate her for who she is. Someone who respects and loves the family as well. I think there was a discussion question earlier on about whether Levin truly loves Kitty, or whether he just wants to be part of the Shabatsky family. I didn't comment at the time, but I think that real love is more than just romantic love. I don't know whether Kitty is the one for Levin, but I do think that maybe what the prince sees in him is the other aspects of love rather than just the romance. The respect, the knowledge, the commitment, the responsibility, the willingness to tackle marital problems with sincerity. Love is more valuable as an action or set of actions than as a feeling. From this perspective, having a love for Kitty that is grounded in more than just romance is advantageous. Maybe the prince suspects that Vronsky merely has pants feelings for Kitty. Pants feelings, whereas Levin is more committed to what a marriage actually entails, i.e. following through with the actions of love, truly caring for Kitty, of respect for her family, etc. MMDT says, I think he views Vronsky as that era's equivalent of a fuckboy. Levin is serious and he knows it. Yeah, I suppose there's always been fuckboys. And there always will be. If Vronsky had a smartphone, you know what kind of picture he'd be sending to Kitty. I think it's fair to assume. All right, that's the conversation done. Thank God as well, because it was really going downhill quick. I thought I'd read some of the lovely comments of support about Bogan, War and Peace. Just a couple. Someone said, this is beautiful. Dragon Yoga said that. EFC Bane said, you really should post this on... You should post this on r/books for exposure for you and for War and Peace. Yeah, I'd like to post it to some other, like, literature subreddits, but I'm just a bit worried about, like... They've got very strict rules about self-promotion. So, I don't know. I just hope that someone else will get a kick out of the book and share it via those posts, you know, and next time the topic of War and Peace comes up on r/books, which it does every now and then, or Tolstoy or whatever, hopefully mine will get a mention. You never know. Maybe it won't, but I like to dream that my absolute dream for this book is that when people have the discussion, which I've seen had millions of times, not just in A Year of War and Peace, but just around the internet, r/books and this kind of thing. Oops, sorry, that's my phone. The conversation of which translation should I read, you know. We've all had that conversation, haven't we? In fact, we had it with Anna Karenina. When that conversation comes up about War and Peace, I want someone to recommend mine. Naturally, like, not as a favor to me. I want someone to genuinely be like, oh, here's another option. Have you heard of the Andrew Lewis translation? That's my absolute dream. To be up there with Maud, P&V, Garnet. What's the other one? There's another really... Briggs, you know, all those. For my silly, bogan one to be in that conversation at all. Body by Demamp says, my oh my, I couldn't be more of a fan of this endeavor. Well done. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Someone else, Silence Prophecy, said, yes, I remember your Bogan translations when this first started. So glad to see this coming to fruition. Thank you. Other Side B says, first of all, congratulations on getting book one completed. Must have taken a lot of work. Props to you, sir. Yeah, it did take a lot of work. It's 50,000 words. I mean, it's only book one of 16. So it sounds like not much, but it's 50,000 words. Like, that's a novel. That's the length of a novel. So, yeah, a lot of work. But, hey, I'll do it 15 more times, hopefully, over the next year and a half or so. Probably 2 years, but, well, it kind of depends how it goes. Depends if people like it, you know. But I'm definitely going to do this thing as a hobby over the, well, as long as it takes. secondly, Other Side B says, I have been listening to your podcast in conjunction with the daily readings of War and Peace. This is last year's podcast. And I think it's really cool seeing what people were talking about last year. I'm a few months behind where we are in the reading. So it keeps what happened earlier in the novel straight. Oh, that's nice. Thank you very much. I'm so glad people still can listen back to older episodes when we did War and Peace and enjoy the podcast. Safe, my mate, said, seeing this brings me great joy. Thank you. Me too. This whole project brings me great joy. Pilot Knob says, you're a hero. I tried in vain to find a translation which is easily understandable to the modern American English reader. Yours looks entertaining and relatable, not to mention Aussie English is the best English. Well done, sir. Yeah, thanks. One of the good byproducts of Bogan language is it is very simple. And so it is a lot easier to read than any of the other translations, I think. And not that it loses anything. Maybe a little bit of the grandiosity if the words are more simplistic, but all the nuance is still there and the meanings of all the sentences still intact. So I've tried to make it so you don't really lose anything by reading my version. You just gain a little bit of extra humour. Cool. All right. That's enough of that. I thought I'd just share some of those well wishes because, I don't know, I'm that kind of guy. Now I'm going to read the next bit of Anna Karenina. And this might be a bit difficult because I've got a handheld microphone and a very large book and no lights. So, wish me luck. I'm reading by the light of my computer screen with a handheld microphone. All right. Chapter 16 goes like this. Vronsky had never known family life. His mother, in her youth, had been a brilliant society woman, and during her married life, and especially in her widowhood, had had many love affairs, known to everybody. He hardly remembered his father and had been educated in the cadet corps. On leaving the corps as a very young and brilliant officer, he at once joined the swim of the wealthy military Petersburg set. Though he occasionally went into the highest Petersburg society, all his love interests lay outside it. In Moscow, after this luxurious course of Petersburg's life, he experienced for the first time the delight of intimacy with a sweet, innocent society girl who fell in love with him. It never entered his head that there could be any wrong in his relations with Kitty. At balls, he danced chiefly with her, and he visited her at home. He talked with her the usual society talk, all sorts of rubbish, but rubbish into which involuntarily he put a special meaning. For her. Though he never said anything to her which could not have been said before, everybody, he was conscious that she was becoming more and more dependent upon him. and the more he felt this, the pleasanter it was, and the more tender became his feelings towards her. He did not know that his behaviour towards Kitty had a name of its own, that it was decoying a girl with no intentions of marrying her, and is one of the evil actions common among brilliant young men like himself. He thought he was the first to discover this pleasure, and he enjoyed his discovery. If he could have heard what her parents said that night, if he could have known her family's point of view and learnt that Kitty would be unhappy if he did not marry her, he would have been much surprised and would not have believed it. He would not have believed that what gave so much and such excellent pleasure to him, and what was more to her, could be wrong. Even less could he have believed that he ought to marry. Marriage had never presented itself to him as a possibility. Not only did he dislike family life, but in accordance with the views generally held in the bachelor world in which he lived, he regarded the family, and especially a husband, as something alien, hostile, and above all, ridiculous. But although Vronsky had no suspicion of what Kitty's parents were saying, he felt, as he left the Shcherbatskys' house that night, that the secret spiritual bond which existed between him and Kitty had so strengthened during the evening that some action ought to be taken. But what this should or could be, he could not imagine. That's what is so delightful, he thought, as he left the Shcherbatskys' house, carrying away from there, as usual, a pleasant feeling of purity and freshness, partly due to the fact that he had not smoked at all that evening. And deeply touched by a new sense of tender joy in the consciousness of her love for him. That is what is so delightful, that nothing was said either by me or by her, yet we so well understand one another, in that subtle language of looks and tones that today, more plainly than ever, she has told me that she loves me. And how sweetly, simply, and above all trustfully, I feel myself better and purer. I feel I have a heart, and that there is much that is good in me. Those dear loving eyes, when she said, and very much. Well, and what of it? Nothing, of course. It's pleasant for me and for her. And he considered where he should finish his evening. He passed in review the places he might go to. The club, a game of bezique, a bottle of champagne with ignitive. No, I won't go there. Chateau de Fleurs. There I should find Oblonsky, French couplets, the can-can. No, I'm sick of it. That's just what I like about the Shcherbatskys, that I myself become better there. I'll go home. He went straight to his rooms at the Hotel de Sceaux, had supper, and after undressing, had hardly laid his head on the pillow before he was fast asleep. All right, there we go, another chapter down. It would seem that whoever suggested that old, what's his name, Vronsky, was a fuckboy, may have been correct. You may have hit the nail on the head. Oh dear. All right. Have your say about that chapter over at the subreddit. Check out Bogan War and Peace from your man, your host, with the most, Andrew Lewis. That's me. It's weird to say your own name. Go to andrewlewis.com and you can read the Bogan blurb. There's a couple of sample texts to see what Bogan text looks like, and it's in comparison with the original Maud. So I'll take a paragraph from Maud and then show you that same paragraph in Bogan. You can find those on andrewlewis.com as well. Have a little look. I hope you get a giggle out of it. All right. Thanks for listening. I will see you tomorrow.